Hello, and welcome to Media News Podcast with me, Mark Campbell. Media News aims to be an authentic voice bringing you real, truthful stories from the Middle East, with a particular focus on the Kurdish question that is often ignored, self-censored, or suppressed by the mainstream media platforms. For this special edition of Media News Podcast, we, as the editorial team at Media News, have had a unique opportunity to be able to speak with Zagros Hewer, a spokesperson of the Kurdistan Communities Union, KCK, an umbrella organization that includes the Kurdistan Workers' Party, the PKK. Aged 45, Zagros Hewer was born in the Kurdish region of Iran and studied English language and literature from the University of Sanandaj before he earned his master's degree in teaching English as a foreign language. Hewer joined the PKK in 2001, following the arrest of Abdullah Öcalan in 1999. As he reportedly said in an interview in 2016, Öcalan's arrest spoke volumes about the abandonment Kurds have historically been subjected to. He said that after reading Abdullah Öcalan's books and discussing his ideas with fellow Kurds, he decided to join the Kurdish movement in 2001. We ask you 6 questions on a range of political topics, including in relation to the recent refugee crisis and political situation in South Kurdistan, his thoughts on the latest political situation in the autonomous administration of North and East Syria, a question on Turkey's economic crises, issues in relation to the recent Council of Ministers meeting regarding the isolation of Abdullah Öcalan, the continuing calls for independent investigations into the alleged use of chemical weapons, and finally, a question about the criminalization of the Kurdish movement. I began by asking Zagros Hewer about the recent situation in South Kurdistan. Zagros Hewer, welcome to Media News, and thank you for agreeing to answer the questions from the Media News editorial team. And so to our first question. What, in your view, does the increasing flow of asylum seekers from Iraqi Kurdistan in the past few months and the recent student protests in Sulaymaniyah and other cities indicate? How do you assess the economic and political situation in Iraqi Kurdistan with a debt crisis going on for at least 7 years and the Kurdistan regional government's compliance with Turkey's aggressions for years and the maintenance of its negative stance against the autonomous administration of North and East Syria? The KDP has also recently issued a statement saying Turkey does not have a problem with the Kurds, but with the Kurdistan Workers' Party, PKK, and that Rojava has to cut off its relations with the PKK. How do you evaluate this statement in particular and the general debate that it refers to, that attempts to draw a line between the Kurds and the PKK?
Well, there are two main reasons for the situation on the Belarus and the Poland's border. Many of those stranded on the border are Kurds from South Kurdistan, from Bashur Kurdistan. Instead of discussing the everyday politics of Belarus and Poland or Russia or even Europe, we have to go to the root causes. Where do these people want to go? They want to go to Europe, they want to go to the West. So why Europe? Because they think that they can have a better life there, much better from that of their own country. Here we come to the first root cause. The forces of capitalist modernity have for hundreds of years looted the resources of the countries of the Middle East, Asia and Africa and carried them to the West. They have built a paradise-like life for themselves in the West at the cost of turning the life into hell in other countries in the Middle East, North Africa. The luxury life in Europe cannot be built based on the continent's own resources unless they loot the resources of the countries of the Middle East. They cannot build such a life there. Evading the hell and going to paradise is a dream of humanity. We have this in the sacred books. We cannot criminalize this intention. When you build a paradise on the earth at the cost of turning the life and the land of others into hell, it's quite normal that people want to go, want to desert the hell and enter paradise. People from all walks of life, be they old or young, men or women, sell all their properties they have. They risk their own life. They risk drowning in the oceans. And they risk freezing to death in the forests in order to reach the paradise in Europe. So the forces of capitalist modernity are responsible for this exodus, for they have set the ground for it. Therefore, they are first to be held responsible for this situation. Secondly, the dictatorial regimes of the Middle East, Asia, Africa, and Latin America have confiscated and monopolized what has been left behind of these stolen resources. They use these remnants to live a posh life for themselves, and they deprive other peoples from they deprive other people of living an honorable life. They deprive peoples of all the opportunities and resources of their countries. People are left hungry and jobless. They destroy the dreams of the young for a better future, for they are so indulging corruption. They curtail freedoms. They oppress any voice of dissent, build their own network of nepotism, favoritism, and kleptocracy. They are not democratic. As far as Kurdistan is concerned, these two factors ruining the fabric of the society are at full force. Also, there is an additional factor in Kurdistan. The Kurdish land has been occupied by four states, and the Kurds have been subjected to cultural and political genocide, forcing people to leave Kurdistan and replacing them with jihadist Arab is one dimension of this genocide. Particularly, South Kurdistan has been turned into a laboratory for implementing capitalist modernity and imposing it on people's life via an undemocratic KDP-led administration, which is a collaborator with the main enemy of the Kurds, that is, the collaborator of the Turkish state. Turkey and KDP are working together to deplete the Kurdish land from its own human and economic resources. KDP has made a 5-year long security and economic deal with Turkey and has totally become of Turkey's long-term genocidal policies against the Kurds. The KDP has let the Turkish army build around 70 military bases in South Kurdistan, from Zanjo in the north to Mosul in the south. It also gives full support to the intelligence and espionage activities of Turkish secret service, that is MIT, in South Kurdistan and Iraq. So when the youth see that their land has been occupied by Turkey, when they see that their resources are looted by tribal rulers and they have been left jobless without a future, they decide to leave their own land and go to Europe. Forces of capitalist modernity, the occupiers of Kurdistan, and collaborators like KDP have turned the land of paradise, have turned Kurdistan into a hell, and people from all walks of life want to leave this hell. As far as the protests in Soleimani are concerned, the recent protests are the students' reaction against this system of corruption and kleptocracy, which has deprived them of their stipends for nearly 7 years. University students observe that on the one side there are the teenage sons of KDP rulers who own universities, companies, private jets, oil wells, And on the other side, near 500,000 students cannot afford paying the bus and taxi fees. They see this great injustice. That's why they have decided to stage protests.
Thank you. Our next question is in relation to the autonomous administration of North and East Syria. Do you think there is a chance of having a consensus between the Syrian administration and the autonomous administration of North and East Syria when the Syrian regime is trying to bring back the past and the autonomous administration of Northeast Syria is trying to build something new? The US administration still hasn't formally recognized the autonomous administration of North and East Syria, and consequently, the international community has followed its lead with all its attendant consequences. Do you believe the Biden administration will recognize the autonomous administration of North and East Syria this or next year?
Well, much has changed since the start of the uprising in Syria in 2011. Hundreds of thousands of people have lost their lives. Millions of people have either been internally displaced or been forced to leave their country. The social and economic fabric has, to a large extent, been ripped apart. The country's infrastructure has been destroyed. This has direct implications for the political system too. President Bashar Assad has already declared that getting the country back to the pre-2011 era is impossible. He has posed the ideas of the idea of decentralization. We think this is a good starting point. Syria is like a mosaic of different peoples, different ethnic and religious identities. We think it's high time the authorities in Damascus appreciate these diversities and show tolerance towards a political and administrative system which foresees some degree of self-rule and local administration for these components. So Damascus must refrain from imposing Arab nationalism on the peoples which are of other ethnic and religious origins. All the peoples of Syria can get united under the broader idea of Syrian identity. The US-led international coalition has narrowed down its mission to only fighting ISIS and cooperating with its partners to this end. They have not yet been fully engaged politically with the administrative body of Northeast Syria. Also, the United Nations led Geneva talks after many meetings failed to incorporate the autonomous administration of Northeast Syria. Excluding the autonomous administration of Northeast Syria from the Geneva talks, it means that big powers, including the United States of America and Russia, they prefer their own interests over the interests of the Syrian peoples. So the autonomous administration of Northeast Syria represents a model for the Syrian crisis. This model is based on fraternity between the peoples, democracy, and the freedom of women within the framework of territorial integrity and the unity of Syria. If anyone wants a solution for the Syrian crisis, he has to take this model into account. They have to take this model into account and work to ensure that it is represented in international platforms for the solution of the Syrian crisis. Also, Turkey poses a threat to the solution of the Syrian crisis. There will be no real solution to this crisis as long as Turkey continues its occupation of Syrian land and its support for radical jihadist terrorist groups. The United States of America and Russia have both competing agendas on the role of Turkey in the Syrian crisis. The United States uses Turkey to put pressure on the Assad regime and Russia. It turns a blind eye on Turkey's accommodation of ISIS and Nusra leaders in the areas it has occupied, from Idlib to Serikani. On the other hand, Russia uses Turkey's threat of more invasion as a leverage against the autonomous administration of northeast Syria and tries to take more concessions from it. One wonders why an occupier like Turkey is given a role in Geneva, but an administration which represents nearly all peoples of Syria and governs one-third of Syria is shunned away from Geneva. The Biden administration's dealing with the autonomous administration politically will depend on its larger Middle East and North Africa policies. If they want an end to the Syrian crisis, they will deal with the... If they want an end to this crisis in Syria, they will deal politically with the autonomous administration. But if they want the crisis to continue, they will restrict this interaction only to military matters. Whatever the politics of big powers may be, the peoples of northeast Syria and Rojava should know that their own self-organization, their own self-defense and education is the most crucial factor in bringing about a solution to the Syrian crisis. Having achieved this level of organization and awareness, they should look for ways to reach an agreement with the authorities in Damascus based on the democratization of Syria, based on freedom and justice.
Thank you. A question now on the economic crisis in Turkey. What do you think the economic and political situation in Turkey will be now, as the crash of the Turkish currency and the slide towards hyperinflation signals a severe economic crisis?
Well, the key word to answer this question are Erdogan's remarks in 2019, February 9, I think, when he lamented those who criticized his government over the rising prices of basic goods, particularly vegetables and fruits. In front of a pro-AKP crowd, he called on his critics, "Do you know how much a bullet costs?" He has repeated it. "Do you know how much a bullet costs?" Well, his question explains the underlying reason for the current economic crisis in Turkey, reasons for high inflation, for the free fall of the Turkish lira. The AKP-MHP fascist rule has invested a lot in their genocidal war in Kurdistan. They have usurped all of Turkey's resources to fight the Kurds, to evict the Kurds from their ancestral lands on which they have lived for more than 12,000 years. They have given many political and particularly economic concessions to foreign powers in order to get their support for their genocidal campaign against the Kurds. According to the findings of a London-based Democratic Progress Institute, the Turkish state's war on the Kurds has cost the country $3 trillion. Well, to quote from the state authorities, we can refer to Parliament Speaker Köksal Toptan, who in 2007 stated that this war has cost the country $250 billion. He was followed by Cemil Çiçek, who a year later he said that this amount was $300 billion. 3 years later, Faruk Çelik, I think 2011, he stated that the cost has been $400 billion. And Erdogan himself kept the figure at $300 billion in one of his 2013 speeches. Now, at a time when Erdogan reaches out to the United Arab Emirates for a $10 billion loan to slow down the fall of lira, you can imagine the status of Turkish currency had taken not used all this money for its genocidal war against the Kurds. As long as the Kurdish question is left unresolved, the economic crisis in Turkey will further deepen, and people will face high inflation. They will face unemployment more than any time before. We can say that the political and ideological mindset of Turkish authorities and of the Turkish state are the main cause of the economic problems and lira's collapse. The only cure to the current economic crisis is a change in the mentality, a change in the mindset of the Turkish authorities towards democratization, towards human rights, women's rights, and towards and more importantly, toward the solution of the Kurdish question. They have to abandon the policy of denial, the policy of denial and the policy of genocide against the Kurds.
Thank you. Our next question is in relation to the situation of isolation of the Kurdish leader Abdullah Öcalan. The Committee of Ministers of the Council of Europe has been called upon to take the aggravated life imprisonment sentence given to the JLPKK leader Abdullah Öcalan as an item on its agenda. Do you believe that the Council of Europe may push Turkey more to comply with international laws and the decision of the European Court of Human Rights? How do you evaluate the international silence regarding this special law applied on Imrali prison for the last 23 years?
Well, the Kurdish question in its modern form is the making of European countries. The Treaty of Lausanne sacrificed the Kurds, sacrificed the identity of the Kurds, their existence, politically and socially, for the interests of big powers and the interests of regional states. The land of the Kurds was divided into four parts, and the Kurds were left with a destiny of denial, assimilation, and genocide. Great European powers like Britain, like France and Germany, are party to this treaty and are therefore responsible for the plight and sufferings of the Kurds. So, Leader Apo, as the leader of the Kurds, took the problem to the European political platform after 76 years and called on the EU member states to contribute to the solution of the problem they had created for the Kurds and the whole Middle East. But his call not only fell on deaf ears, but also these states denied him a safe stay in Europe. European states, which claim that they are the cradle of democracy, the cradle of human rights, rule of law, they failed in the face of a real test to these values. In order to deny Leader Apo a safe stay in Germany, German courts cancelled arrest warrants they had issued for him some 10 years earlier. Germany violated and trampled its own laws and denied Leader Apo entry to the country. Their aim was to deprive him of any platform to express himself, even in German courts. Like Germany, many EU countries paved the ground for his kidnapping by the CIA by not recognizing him asylum rights. So they are accomplices in his illegal abduction by the CIA. In fact, by traveling to Europe, Leader Apo wanted to give Europe a leverage over the USA with regard to the Kurdish question. Playing a positive role in the solution of the Kurdish question would have given Europe more leverage in the Middle East policies. It would have been a win-win solution project for the Kurds and for Europe. Lady Darpo's abduction is a violation of the laws of Europe. If there is any trial in this case, EU member states should sit in the dock, not in the bench. They have violated all legal and humanitarian values by abetting in the handing over of Lady Darpo to Turkey. There is an arbitrarily designed special law applied to an illegally kidnapped leader, a regularly updated detention regime for a person taken hostage. There is a regularly updated detention regime for a person taken hostage who has been taken hostage. The hostage takers are always bringing about new rules and arbitrarily putting forward new ransoms. They are taking revenge on him on a day-to-day basis. There are arbitrary punishments and arbitrary bans on visits. For example, pacing up and down a courtyard, an activity which is the most natural right of a detainee, is used as an excuse to dictate more punishments on him, be it a ban on family visits or lawyer visits. Lately, his lawyers have been informed that they have imposed a 6-month-long visit ban on him. He himself described the detention regime in Emreli as resembling that of Guantanamo, or even going far beyond it. All these facts show that Lady Darpo is treated as a hostage. He is a political hostage, abducted by the conspiracy of international powers, particularly a USA, Britain, Israel. In his person, the society has been taken hostage by the state. He's the beating heart and the thinking mind of society. And what they want as ransom is his abandoning of his struggle for freedom, for democracy and women's liberation and ecology. The 23-year-long solitary confinement regime imposed on him is a crime against humanity, against free humanity. It cannot be justified by any national or international law. Lady Darpo's imprisonment situation represents sheer lawlessness, complete lawlessness, and the infringement of all the universally accepted human values and international law. The Committee of Ministers of the Council of Europe should handle the case as a matter of law and human rights, as a matter of the communal and political rights of the Kurdish people. For Lady Darpo is the leader of the Kurdish people. He is no ordinary hostage. Till now, the Council of Europe has adopted politically motivated stances with regard to the case. They have made it a matter of political bargain with Turkey. Human values, I should say, natural rights and law should not be turned into a bargaining chip. On the 3rd of September, the Committee of Ministers of the Council of Europe determined that Turkey has not fulfilled the requirements of right to hope, a decision taken in 2014. That is, Turkey has violated decisions of the European Court of Human Rights and the Committee of Ministers. This means that Turkey has acted against the laws of the Council of Europe. Turkey has acted against the Council of Europe, and the Council of Europe has failed to enact and enforce its own law. Also, 3 years ago, the Commission for the Prevention of Torture, the CPT, ruled that Lydia Apo and the other three detainees' detention situation amounts to that of torture. But nothing has been done. The last ruling of the Committee of Ministers is important, and we have to follow whether they will honor their own decision or not. Also, this ruling is far from sufficient. It is a delayed and belated decision, we should say. Instead of calling on Turkey to act immediately to improve the situation in Imralı and work for the freedom of Lider Apo, it has given Turkey one more year time. The Kurds actually cannot wait for one more year. We have to step up our struggle. At issue is the destiny of the people and the torture regime and solitary confinement imposed on its leader. This torture and solitary confinement must end. The CPT should visit Imreli and investigate the situation there. They should update the Kurdish people about what's going on in Imreli. In fact, when it comes to defending human values and human rights, especially the rights of the Kurds, the people of Europe, the intellectuals, academics, journalists, human rights activists are far more ahead of the states and official bodies. The peoples have always stood in solidarity with the struggle of the Kurdish people and have identified with the aggravated solitary confinement imposed on Lider Apo. As in the last years, this year too, 700 representatives who had joined the conference of the Unite the Union in Britain. They called on the Turkish state to free Lider Apo and to start peace talks with the representatives of the Kurdish people. So, on behalf of our movement, I would like to salute and thank all the members and representatives of Unite the Union. The Kurdish people will never forget their sense of solidarity, freedom, and justice. Their campaign is highly appreciated.
Thank you. Our fifth question is in relation to the repeated calls for an independent investigation into Turkey's alleged use of chemical weapons. The KCK's Committee of Health has previously appealed to the international organisations such as the Organisation for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons, the OPCW, the CPT, and Doctors Without Borders to launch an investigation into Turkey's alleged use of chemical warfare against the Kurdish fighters in Iraqi Kurdistan. Why do you believe your calls have not found any correspondence with these institutions to date? How would you assist these organizations if they ever do decide to form an independent committee to investigate the use of the alleged use of chemical warfare?
Unfortunately, the Kurds have been one of the prime victims of chemical gas attacks in the world. These attacks have either been abetted by or neglected by the international powers. In 1938, in the massacre of Dersim, the Turkish state used chemical gas to kill those civilians who had taken refuge in the caves. The documents of Germany's role in providing the Turkish army with those chemical gases have just recently began to emerge. Also, we have the 1988 chemical attack by Saddam against Halabja. The international mainstream media and international powers highlighted the matter only when they had changed their policies towards Saddam. Saddam did that massacre before their eyes. With those gases these powers had given to him. Turkey has been using chemical weapons against the Kurdistan Freedom Guerrillas since the 1990s, particularly since 23rd of April this year. It has used chemical weapons of five different types against Kurdistan Freedom Guerrillas. It has used them 323 times, resulting in the martyrdom of 38 of our comrades. Despite the many facts and data documenting these war crimes, and despite the many calls by the Kurdish people and the international powers and international institutions to investigate the use of chemical weapons, unfortunately no international or regional actor, particularly bodies responsible for the prohibition of chemical weapons like OPCW, have batted an eyelash at the widespread use of these weapons by the Turkish army. Their silence and lack of action are a sign of their complicity in the use of chemical weapons. We know how Turkey bribed the OPCW during its October 2019 attack 2 years ago on Serikani in Rojava, Kurdistan. The aim was to ensure its silence over the use of white phosphorus and chemical weapons against the civilians and freedom fighters there.
Thank you. Our last and final question is in relation to the continued struggle to find an opening or avenue for a peaceful and lasting settlement to the Kurdish question, which will necessitate the removal of the PKK from the list of proscribed organizations. So with that in mind, what is your message to those countries who have placed the PKK on proscribed lists after requests from Turkey? Why should the PKK be taken off the list of proscribed organizations in the European Union and United States? Does the listing of the PKK as a terrorist organization frustrate any meaningful peace initiatives that could be initiated to resolve the Kurdish question in Turkey?
The PKK is a movement which struggles to defend the existence of the Kurdish people and to ensure their freedom. Waging this struggle, the PKK has developed its own paradigm of democratic, ecological, and women emancipatory society. The PKK is the most legitimate and just struggle of a people whose very existence has been denied, whose language has been banned, and whose cultural and political identity has been subjected to genocide. Since the Lausanne Treaty, Turkey has been spearheading this policy against the Kurds. So the PKK is the name of resistance, the name of the resistance against this policy. The PKK is the freedom movement of a people struggling against state terror. Putting PKK on the terror list is an arbitrary decision taken only to appease the Turkish state. This designation has no legitimate and legal base, but only serves the economic and political interests of the countries which are members of NATO. Well, some years ago, the Belgian court ruled against such a decision. It ruled against it in 2020, January. But this decision fell over deaf eyes, on deaf ears. Keeping the PKK on that list means giving legitimacy to the denial and annihilation policies against the Kurds, as it was lately articulated by Hulusi Akar. He said that there was no place in the world called Kurdistan. This designation means abetting or being an accomplice to all those crimes that have been committed by the Turkish army, Turkish intelligence and junta against the Kurds. From 1993 on, the PKK has declared 10 unilateral ceasefires to facilitate the solution of the Kurdish question and the democratization of Turkey. But Turkey has responded to all these ceasefires by escalating its military operations against the guerrillas and the detention, imprisonment and killing of political activists, forced disappearance of political activists, civil society members, journalists, human rights defenders and normal civilians. The developments of the last 10 years in the Middle East have completely proven the invalidity and illegality and illegitimacy of NATO's designation of the PKK as a terrorist organization. Everybody knows that Turkey was and still is the main sponsor and supporter of radical jihadist groups from the Nusra Front to ISIS to Taliban. Turkey was the main route for ISIS members to enter Syria and Iraq, and Turkey still harbors thousands of ISIS and Nusra and Al-Qaeda members, either on its soil or in the territories it has occupied in Syria. Everybody knows where Baghdadi was killed. Just 5 kilometers off the Turkish border, in an area controlled by Turkey. PKK is an organization which has spearheaded the struggle against ISIS in Iraq and Syria. It was the PKK which rushed to the defense of Sinjar and Kobani in Iraq and Syria. 6,000 of PKK cadres have sacrificed their lives in the fight against ISIS and the Nusra Front in Iraq and Syria. These are undeniable facts. But at the same time, we see that PKK is on the terror list of NATO, while Turkey is considered a strategic partner and a valuable ally of NATO. How come the main supporter and sponsor of ISIS is a NATO ally, but an organization which has fought most against ISIS is kept on the terror list? This fact shows the degree to which this designation is arbitrary, it is interest-driven, and it is illegitimate and devoid of any political, social, cultural, historical, and legal ground. It shows the hypocrisy and the double standards of NATO member countries. Now, all peoples in the Middle East and around the world are coming to understand the injustice made against the Kurds by designating the PKK as a terrorist organization. More and more people are campaigning in different forms and platforms to draw attention to this injustice and delist the PKK. Recently, a campaign on social media was run by the Kurds and their friends all around the world, calling on related authorities to delist the PKK. This campaign garnered huge support from 30 countries. Also, 54 organizations have established Left PKK Ban Initiative on 27th of November. Thousands of Kurds, socialists, ecologists, anti-fascists and libertarians gathered and marched in Berlin to lift Germany's 28-year-old ban on PKK. We salute and appreciate all these activities participating in this march. We appreciate their valuable efforts. Also, in France, 120 intellectuals, academics, politicians, unionists, journalists, and civil and political activists, they wrote and signed a letter to President Biden and called on him to delist the PKK. This was a very important and meaningful campaign we salute and thank all the signatories and we appreciate their efforts.
Thank you so much for that, Zagros Hewer. Zagros Hewer, spokesperson of the Kurdistan Communities Union, KCK, thank you very much for speaking to Media News today and for your answers to the Media News editorial team's 6 questions that were formulated to add to the discussion and the important search for a political and peaceful solution to the Kurdish question in the Middle East. So thank you for joining us and goodbye.